In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
After a bout of technical itis, we are glad to be back and thank you for joining us today as every week we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. Speaking of, technology is really a good example of how bad big government can be. Last week we had a problem with Skype. We've used this software program for a long time to call and interview guests. But last week when we tried to do the interview, its software decided a better way to make phone calls was to interfere with how our hardware was set up. Now, did the software engineers know our unique personal setup when they made the changes? No. Did they ask if we wanted them to make a change? No. Did they give us an option whether we wanted the change? No. They just did it because their experts had decided how we were doing things was not the right way. So between Skype and Microsoft, they bricked our production computer, wasting a whole bunch of time and costing us a lot of money, all because they thought we were wrong. So we had to find a way around big tech, which we did. And we will continue to use a workaround until they decide to shut down what works for us, and we'll have to find another way. And for some reason, it just really seems to bother them that we don't do it the way they want. That is the experience of businesses every day, trying to find a way around government that is throwing regulations and taxes and expenses and costing time and money to deal with government when you should be focusing on getting work done to make the money that the government then thinks is theirs. Government, like technology, should be there to help. It should make things easier, less complicated, putting its resources to work to solve problems and to offer solutions and options, not do it this way because our experts say so. Experts whose only experience is in big cities and big business, and none of their solutions work for small businesses, small towns, and God help you if you live in a rural area. Our solution was to go back to a previous version that did work. But now, going forward, we'll have to fight it off every time it wants to update, which is every time. And doesn't that just sum up what we need right now in government? A previous version. On today's show, we're talking with two guests who are on the front lines of freedom. We'll talk with Chuck Weiss in a moment about the court case we brought you months ago, a voter wanting transparency in our elections, but Washington County and the Secretary of State said no and sued him to prevent it. That case was heard this week and Chuck was at it. But first, Mike Erickson running in CD6. Remember the strategy we've mentioned previously. If you're in a safe district like CD2 or hopeless one, that's CDs 1 and 3, help candidates in districts where there's a chance to flip that seat. And in Oregon, that's 4, 5, and 6. I'd like to welcome Mike Erickson to the show. He's a businessman and he's the Republican candidate for Oregon's new CD6. Mike, it's great to talk to you.
Great to be here too. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are new to us and new to probably most of our audience. Talk to us a bit about yourself and why you decided to run this year.
That sounds great. Well, I think like a lot of us, we see what's happening in the news every day and we see what's happening in our state and the world here. And, you know, I'm running for Congress for one reason. I'm fed up with where our state and our country are headed. I'm tired of seeing the liberal agendas being pushed on this country and at every level from in the past when all the school shutdowns and mandates mm-hmm. and employee issues regarding the masks and everything, even though some of those were important, they just carried on too far and started ruining people's businesses and lives. And, you know, I just got a little fed up with it. I'm a small business owner, and we really need to do better for this country. And we need to get some new leaders back there that really have some common sense business experience like I do. And, you know, I'm not going in there with a political agenda, trying to fight certain issues or certain social issues. I really want to go back and take care of the problems that I think are most important for this country. And so I jumped in this race on the last day that you could file, actually. Yeah. And we won the primary almost 2-1 over some good candidates. And we're making headways right now. We're up in some of the polls we're seeing here.
Yes, very encouraging. So the whole point, since you mentioned primaries, the whole point of a primary is to decide which team members your team will put on the field against the other team. And you beat back a whole field of Republicans, as you said. Why do you think that you won? I mean, what was the feedback that you got from people as to why you were their choice, and why did they think that you would then win in the general?
Well, I've been a problem solver, both as a businessman and a community leader. I started a company 30 years ago in Tigard, right here in the district, and you know, I helped companies fix their supply chain problems. And in the last 2 years, supply chain issues, supply chain delays, supply chain cost increases were just in the news everywhere. And I think people want to get some people with some real solid business background that can go back and solve some of those problems. And I've been a problem solver helping some of the biggest companies in the world, like the John Deere's or the Under Armour's or Starbucks and other large companies that utilize our expertise to help lower their supply chain costs, shipping costs, and help make them more efficient. And I think people just are tired of career politicians. Mm. You know, I'm a, like I said, a common sense businessman, but I'm a family man as well. I think that resonated real well with voters. I've got two young kids, 7 years old and 10 years old, and my wife, who's been a labor delivery nurse for over a decade. And I'm just really fed up with where our country's going, and I'm doing this for the right reasons and not for political reasons.
Good. So Oregon Democrats, after lying about a deal with Republicans to give them an equal seat on redistricting and then completely betraying them by passing their own plan to ensure 4 out of 6 Oregon's congressional districts were all touching and influenced by Portland, well, things may not have been turning out quite as schemed as you alluded. Some of the polls are showing good chances, not just for you, but for Republicans in 3 of those districts, 4, 5, and 6. What do you make of that, and what would you attribute that to?
Well, I think our district, the 6th district, is the newest. There's no incumbent, so there's never been a Congress member representing this district here, which is, you know, Salem and Marion County, Polk County out there by Independence and Dallas and the Grand Ronde. Then you got McMinnville, Newburgh, which is the Yamhill County, the wine country, a lot of farming area out there. Then you've got, you know, Tigard, Tualatin, a part of Beaverton, and Sherwood, which is Washington County, which is still... not Portland, at least. Then you got some of Lake Oswego, Wilsonville, Woodburn. I think it's a great district. The demographics of this district are unique, and there's a lot of farming and agriculture, nursery stock, growers out there. You got some high tech businesses, but like I said, it's not downtown Portland, which gives it a unique flavor, in my opinion. And it's really, really a good district from what people. I've been in the district for 30 years as a businessman. I moved to Tigard and Tualatin almost like 40 years ago, so I'm very familiar with the district. I've been involved in the community, so for me, it's a great district to be a representative in.
So, just real quick, what are you finding to be the biggest uphill battle in your race?
Well, it comes down to you've got a lot of it's a D4 district for one. So when they did do the gerrymandering of the districts and so forth, they added about 21,000 or 23,000 more Democrats to the district at the get-go. So, but they also probably didn't really pay a lot of attention to this. Maybe they did or maybe they didn't, but there was about 43% of the district is registered NAVs, non-affiliated or independent. A lot of those are fairly conservative folks that may have been, maybe former Republicans that maybe got turned off on the party for whatever reason, but they're still leaning conservative out there. And that's the lion's share of the voters. I mean, 43%, where you get like the 5th district has about like 24% NAVs and independents, and I think it's about the same down in the 4th district. So, and those in our polling, those independents, almost by 20-30% more, are leaning towards me in their the polling results.
Wow.
So that's a key reason
sure.
This district is leaning Republican this year.
Well, that's definitely very encouraging. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Democrat Bill Clinton famously had a sign in the Oval Office, "It's the economy, stupid," as a reminder that the economy is what matters most to most people. We've gone from that to "it's a stupid economy." We'll talk about that next with Mike Erickson, running for Congress in Oregon's new CD6. Mike Erickson is our guest today. He is a businessman running for Oregon's newly created CD6, which is mainly the Northwest Willamette Valley, but includes parts of Western Marion County, especially Salem and Kaiser. To find out more about him and ways you can support him, his website is MikeErickson4Congress.org, not .com, .org. Erickson is spelled with a C and a K, E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. Four is spelled out, F-O-R, not the number. And so altogether, it's MikeErickson4Congress.org. And to make all of that a lot easier, you can just head to iSpyRadio.com for that link. And others mentioned today, look at the top for this week's show or in the search box for show 1239. And so, Mike, your business is all about logistics. And last week, when we were scheduled to talk with you, last Thursday, actually, rail companies and workers reached a tentative agreement to avoid a nationwide strike. And the deal includes a 24% pay raise over a number of years, bringing their average salary to $110,000, which is nothing to sneeze at. The AP framed it as workers winning key concessions. But other than the pay raise, from what I could see, that the deal really did not address some of the key issues that the workers were after, such as working conditions and additional time off. The deal still needs to be ratified by the workers' unions. So with your background in logistics, would you care to comment on this situation and what it could have meant to the national supply chain if they'd gone on strike during this kind of economy?
Well, people get worried because of, crops are being picked right now, and harvest mm-hmm. season is falls upon us here, and having crops sit in containers on the rail during a strike could be devastating to a lot of farmers and people that need that food across the country. So I'm glad it didn't happen. But you look at the alternative if the rails weren't there, the trucking prices to ship something from a 53-foot truck from Oregon to the East Coast typically is about $3,000 for a full truckload all the way across, whether it be nursery or farming, other farm supplies or farm products. And now it's about like $7,000 to $8,000. The costs have jumped up so much. So, those prices are being passed on to consumers right now. And so the rail is a much cheaper alternative to trucking that's out there today. So I'm glad it didn't happen.
So the rail situation and supply chain issues are all just part of a larger overall economy. The day that Biden took office, average hourly wages were up 4% from the year before, thanks to the Trump economy, which was really truly amazing because it was in spite of COVID. Wages immediately began to drop like a rock after Biden took office, hitting negative 3% just three short months later, a 7% swing. Worse, if you can believe it, they have stayed negative his entire time in office. And combine that with 5, 6, 7, now 8% of inflation, and this is hitting middle-income families especially hard. It's weird, though, because according to Democrats, inflation over 8% isn't a problem. Two quarters of negative GDP isn't a problem either, and a recession isn't a recession unless a Republican is in office. So would you care to comment on this economy and maybe start giving us some solutions to it?
The economy is crumbling on our feet right now. People are, I shouldn't say it that bad, but it's almost that bad. People on fixed incomes and mm-hmm. families that are, they're barely surviving out there. I've heard so many people on the campaign trail tell me that it's equivalent to losing 1 month's salary over the last year and a half. Wow. 8% increase mm-hmm. in inflation, and I'm having to work a whole month for free just to make up for what I had a year earlier. And that's sort of doesn't sit well with all these voters out there. And people are just fed up with where the country's going, the direction that the Democrats are taking this country right now. And like we mentioned, I'm in supply chain, but inflation's about, I think, four components here. You got the price of energy or the price of fuel, diesel, gas, which is substantially more, almost double what it was sure. a couple years ago. You got supply chain costs up almost double what they were, and all those costs are being passed on to consumers. You got those farmers paying much more for diesel, and they're passing on those costs and the truck yeah. costs.
And fertilizer.
Then you've got government spending out of control. You've added $3 trillion to the national debt in the last 8 months alone. And so you've got a $32-33 trillion deficit out there that, the interest rate on that, and that we're paying other countries who own the debt that we have. That's just pig piling on an inflationary problem that's just got to get under control.
Yeah.
But we in Congress need to do more to rein in government spending, get our supply chain costs under control, and get our company back to being energy independent. That's really important. And it's not just the fuel prices, but we got to really look to the future as well. We need a green energy solution in the future, as well as a hybrid approach. We need to get that Keystone pipeline built. They shut it down right after Biden got elected. And that could have been a great transfer of low-cost fuel from Canada and the northern states down to the refineries down in Houston and other places. So they shut that down and drove up the cost of fuel. So there's a lot of things we can do in Congress. We just need to get some members of Congress that can really see through the garbage out there and have some common sense approach and start solving these problems.
Well, green energy is certainly something to talk about in the future with you, but let's leave that for another day. It started about a month ago, but really didn't hit the news until last week. But major retailers, Walmart, Target, Kohl's, Macy's, and others, all started canceling billions of dollars of orders for the fourth quarter. And here we are heading into the fourth quarter. That's Christmas season, and you've got major retailers canceling goods at a time when they would normally be ordering goods. And the ripple effects this will have back up the supply chain as all of these manufacturers have suddenly had orders pulled out from them. I honestly cannot think of this ever happening before. Billions of dollars of orders canceled heading right into Christmas. The left-wing media has tried to say, oh, it's no big deal. They just had all of this inventory piling up, which is a problem in and of itself. To me, this is a big deal. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, people don't have the discretionary income they used to even 2 years ago, a year ago. I mean, like just mentioned, with inflation up, eating up their cost of milk and bread and butter and, you know, gas prices up, people have made decisions that they're going to just live within a stricter budget. And so that means not buying those extra things you'd see around Christmas, or people are tightening the belt. And people are very concerned where this country's going. They don't see any relief in sight. And that's why we need to get some new leadership back in D.C. to sort of like put a stop to this. Yeah. And I'm hoping to be a big part of that and make some differences back in Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's take a break a little bit early. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Mike Erickson. He is running for Congress in Oregon's CD6. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Just a quick reminder that if you missed some of the links or stories we mentioned, we always post the links up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for this week's show up at the top, and it is 12:39 if you're using the search function. One such link to keep in mind is MikeErickson4Congress.org. Also, if you have to miss part of the show or just want to listen again or share it, the podcast version is always available Mondays after its air on all of our network stations. You can find that also on iSpyRadio.com, on the individual show pages, or on your favorite podcast platform. And so Mike Erickson is our guest today. He's a businessman with deep experience in logistics and supply chain issues, and he's running for Congress, hence that webpage in Oregon's brand new CD6. And Mike, during the break there, I was trying to get a feel for some of the things that maybe we should talk about that maybe we haven't yet. And one of your big issues right now is crime. I understand your father was a police officer.
Yeah, my dad spent 30 years as a on-duty police officer out there keeping our community safe. And, you know, I always looked at him as he's risking his life every day for all of us. And, you know, I really respect what the job that police officers do in our communities and throughout the state and throughout the country here. And unfortunately, the defund the police mentality, the protests against law enforcement, obviously the majority, the vast majority, like 99% of them do a really good job and are good, honest, hardworking police officers and, you know, sheriffs and so forth out there. And I'm just tired of the people that are going out there with that mindset that they're voting in Salem and on the national level on laws that sort of make it harder for police officers to do their job. My opponent, Andrea Salinas, has voted 7 or 8 times against law enforcement here just in the last 2 years alone, making it harder for police officers to do their job. And what that does is sends a message to all the law enforcement officers out there that, hey, they're not supported. And people are retiring early. They're looking for other careers or leaving. And so we need to start encouraging and fund the police and do the things that are right to get them. Because without safe communities and safe areas, our country's in a real problem.
Well, you know, I don't think that I had known until you mentioned it just now that she had voted against police and whatnot, because it's a little odd. That's the one thing that you two have in common is you both had fathers who were policemen. And yet there she is voting against the police.
Well, I didn't even know her dad was a police officer, maybe down in Mexico when he was a young person. But, you know, when he came across the border in Mexico and he was a migrant worker in her earlier commercials. In her other commercials, she talks about her dad being a migrant worker. That's the first I heard that, and I looked at the badge. It looked like it's from somewhere down in Mexico. So I'm not sure if that's how accurate that is or what. But, you know, I look at this bill here. She voted like 6 different bills in 2021, 2022. Against law enforcement, I mean, over and over about interfering with their jobs and when they can arrest people. I mean, she's at bad and zero. She was like 0-for-8 on legislative bills that help law enforcement.
Well, that is rather shocking. I had gotten that information off of her webpage, and it sounds like he may have been a police officer here in the States, although maybe it was both. But at any rate, in looking through her website, and of course, this is my interpretation, she had a really nice life story right up until she runs into a wall of progressive big government. She talked about how nothing was ever handed to her dad, who worked in the fields. He then served in the U.S. military to gain his citizenship here, which then led to a career in the police. So that's why I kind of think that he was here. So her childhood, her childhood, though, was all about hard work and lifting themselves up. But then she went to Berkeley, and somehow it went from hard work to fighting for government handouts. That's astonishing. So why do you suppose, really, that so many Democrats running for office just seem to dislike hard work or the value of life lessons to be gained from hard work?
Well, she worked out in California. She's from California most of her life and moved here to Oregon, you know, a few years back. But she worked for Senator Feinstein and right out of college. And as you know, Senator Feinstein was one of the most liberal U.S. senators of all time. So she worked for her and worked for her back in her Washington, D.C. office. Then she worked for Harry Reid. And she worked for a congressman in California, Peter Stark. So she spent her whole life working for liberal congressional members down in California. So I would assume that's where she got her training. But then she comes up here to Oregon, got appointed to the Oregon legislature downtown Portland. And so just to see that she's voting against law enforcement and protesting against defund the police movement is just, I think she's been brainwashed by the California politician she's worked for.
Well, it's got to be something, because you don't grow up with a dad as a police officer and then start voting against the police. So something is certainly screwed up there. You know, I just look at this notion that the Democrats seem to be really opposed to hard work. And there are so many lessons, life lessons, to be gained from hard work. And when you take away someone's motivation to improve themselves, they generally don't, which is why they become so dependent on government handouts.
Yeah, well, then she became a union lobbyist back in Washington, D.C., and so you can see what's happened there. You know, that just that now it's even more of the same mentality. Is like, you know, just her and I are so different in all of our political views. So there's a big difference. She's going to be another AOC or another Kate Brown,
yeah.
Or I just want to be a problem solver and a small business owner that goes back and takes care of the problems affecting everybody in this state here.
Yeah. Well, on her website there, she goes on to say that she helped pass the nation's most progressive paid family leave bill here in Oregon. This is a new tax that hasn't even hit pocketbooks yet. It's due to hit, I think, in January of the next year. It's a new tax in Oregon where workers will now pay 1% of their salary for someone else to take time off work. And this is an accomplishment.
It just makes it harder on small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. So real quick, and we only got about a minute here with you. Let's nutshell this. Why are you right for CD6, and why is she so wrong for it?
Well, I'm a small business owner. I've started my company here in Tigard. I employ people, where she's never, I think, signed a check for a single employee. She doesn't know what it's like to provide health care for your employees. I've been a problem solver helping some of the largest companies in the U.S. with their supply chain problems, which is badly needed in today's world, getting all the supply chain delays and costs under control. I'm not a politician, or she's been a politician her whole life. She's either worked for politicians or is a politician. And like I said, she's never held a run a job or paid wrote a check out to a single employee. So there's a big difference in my mentality and supporting, you know, small businesses and families versus her being a politician her whole life. And I'm from right here in the Northwest my whole life. She's from California.
Yeah. Well, Mike, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. We want to wish you all the best going forward. Your website, one more time, MikeErickson4Congress.org. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com, and we look forward to having you back again soon.
Thank you.
I'd like to welcome Chuck Weiss back to the show. He is a former meteorologist, one of our favorite guests, and a fearsome global warming debunker because he uses real applied science to disprove it, not fantasy and computer models that rely on the old garbage in, millions of dollars of global warming grants out. Chuck, it's great to talk to you again.
Glad to be back, Mark.
Yeah, so we wanted to have you on. Not only do we appreciate your critical thinking skills, but because you are now personally involved on the front lines of some of these fights, including election integrity. But we can't have you on without commenting at least a little bit on climate change. Other than a burst or two of heat, in my opinion, it's been a rather kind of cooler than normal summer, and certainly a very cool and very wet spring. So maybe you could comment on that. But also, did you happen to notice that there's been no massive out of control wildfires this year? There's been one or two large ones, but you know, that's really been it. But I thought wildfires were entirely due to global warming. And if that's true, does that mean that we defeated global warming this year? What happened?
Well, yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy to keep claiming that the fires are proof of climate change, because they're not. Dr. Bob Zybak, who is from Oregon State University with a PhD in forestry, has gone over this time and time again. And the forest fires are basically being caused by a complete lack of proper management of the forests. So there's just a lot of dead growth and brush that builds up over time. and it becomes very volatile fuel in the normal course of hot summer weather or warm summer weather, as evaporation takes a lot of moisture out of the soil. And then if you get a thunderstorm with a lightning strike or a careless camper, that's all it takes to get a fire going. And with all this uncontrolled brush, they turn into major fires.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, we haven't had near the fire activity. I'm not sure of all the reasons for it, but I can tell you that the spring and into the early part of the summer was wetter, much wetter and cooler than average. The switch wasn't turned to hot here until we got into the month of July and August. Then suddenly things turned off and became warmer than average, and we had some 100-degree days, we had some 90-degree days. So they boosted the temperatures above average, but it by no means has anything to do with climate change. It was simply an anomaly to actually what's a colder pattern that develops in the Pacific Northwest, which is the cold phase of the Pacific Decadal Oscillation that is coupled with La Nina. And normally when you get that, actually most of the time when you get that, it causes the Gulf of Alaska waters and then the waters down the Pacific coast to become colder than average. And the tropical Pacific in La Nina is colder than average. But the PDO causes the oceans to flip on the east side of our continent, where they become warmer than average in the Gulf of Mexico and in the Atlantic. And that flip, colder here, warmer there, increases the amount of severe weather and temperature extremes and a host of other things that you normally get in that flipped pattern, more so than when it's warm phase. But looking at that, we would have expected that we wouldn't have had as hot a weather in July and August that we actually ended up getting here in the Northwest, but there was an anomaly to this pattern that developed that triggered that, and that was the fact that the hurricanes were not following this normal pattern. We had 12 named storms in the East Pacific during these 2 months, where we only had 5 in the Atlantic, which is the exact opposite of what you would expect, and the hurricane activity in the East Pacific was pumping southerly winds into the Intermountain region, reinforcing the strength of the normal a hot, high-pressure system that forms there in the summertime, and it allowed it to retrograde or move westward into the Pacific Northwest. So that provided a disconnect to the normal La Nina, cold phase PDO, cooler-than-average summer temperatures here.
Well,
but now that that's calming down, we're likely to go back to what we normally would expect, which is colder and wetter conditions to last through this next fall and winter season.
Hmm. Well, it's weird because they keep predicting gloom and doom every single year. And, of course, every single year it's the hottest year on record. And we know, of course, that's not true. But these kinds of schemes that the left has kicked cooked up, they have real-world ramifications. Over in the UK, they have seen their energy prices soar. In fact, I saw a tweet. It was a guy talking about his mom who gets these advance notices from her electrical companies, and she says, you know, on average, you've been paying some £289, and now they're projecting the next month it's going to skyrocket to something like $1,800, and so this is astounding. And then here, and there was an article on what's up with that. There's a wave of German insolvencies are picking up speed. You've got major steel companies and aluminum companies going offline. And they all cite this tenfold increase in gas and electricity prices. All of this because of the grave that they've dug for themselves. Rather, they have targeted fossil fuels for elimination, and we don't have the infrastructure. And green energy simply can never create the amount of power that they're trying to push. But everybody else is paying for it.
Yes, the green energy policies are a disaster because even if you implemented them fully, Mark, you're not going to change or have any measurable effect in atmospheric CO2 concentration because CO2 and the direction that it goes in the atmosphere is not controlled by humans. That's something the IPCC got completely wrong, and they don't want to admit it. And in fact, if you take a look at the data and analysis that was done by Dr. Ed Berry, who did some published research on what the cause of the atmospheric CO2 is, we find that most of it's attributed to nature, and nature actually controls the direction that it goes. We're only responsible for about 25% of the total in the atmosphere since the start of the Industrial Revolution, which is only 8% of what the actual total amount is of 416 parts per million. So any attempt to reduce this or get it back to these so-called safe values, these absurd notions by James Hansen that you've got to bring it back to 350 to have a safe climate, you're never going to get it there. It's absolutely impossible to do. So when you implement these green energy policies, you're going to bankrupt the energy supply of the United States and most of Europe, and that's already happening over there now, and you're going to get nothing in return for it. That these people that are doing this are absolutely incompetent, they have no sense of scientific reality, and they continue to march right ahead with their plans, even here in Oregon, to add so many renewables, and then telling people that they have to buy electric cars by 2030, they're going to bankrupt the electric grid and create shortage. And I can't help but thinking that somebody hasn't warned them of this, and so why would they go straight ahead to it if it isn't for the fact that they want the shortages and they want to create a control method over all of us as individuals and take away our freedom. That's where a lot of this lies politically, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree with that. On the plus side, the new prime minister of the UK essentially said that they're putting the green economy on hold until they get the current energy needs met. So I think that's encouraging. So maybe some people are starting to wake up to this. We're going to have some fun little things up on iSpy Radio this week as well that just maybe the average person is starting to wake up to this. Okay, that's the fun stuff out of the way. Coming up, we'll be digging into some more serious matters, elections, election theft, court cases, and more. Stay with us. Lots more with Chuck Weiss. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Chuck Weiss. He's a former meteorologist and one of our favorite guests. He's also a fearsome global warming debunker. And as I said in the previous segment, he's now on the front line of some of these major issues here, especially election fraud. So just to kind of take a step back, last week, Lindell had his phone confiscated by the FBI over his work on election integrity. Mike Lindell has said that agents questioned him about his ties and potential financial connections to a Colorado elections official named Tina Peters, who famously downloaded a copy of the election records before and after the elections, showing a clear change in those. So it's unclear whether Lindell himself is actually a target of investigation or if he's just part of this other broader investigation. So you just spent 2 days at the Washington County Courthouse that we'll get to in a minute, but talk to us first about this Lindell and these the phone confiscation and what all is going on.
Well, Mike Lindell was on a hunting trip with a friend, and the FBI surrounded him basically and said, we want your cell phone, and we have a court order to get it from you. He didn't want to surrender it, but he did, and they didn't give him any plausible reason why they were taking his phone. But it was completely outrageous that they would even do such a thing when the data on the phone could be obtained in other ways, much less intrusive, because he needed the phone to do a lot of his day-to-day business with. But on the advice of his lawyer, he gave them the phone anyway, and they also confiscated one of his scientific expert's phone, Dr. Douglas Frank, and under the same premise that they were doing some sort of an investigation that related to this elections nonsense in Colorado. But what happened in Colorado is not anything that I could see that was ever improper. I mean, no laws were broken there. Ms. Peters, who was the election clerk of Mesa County in Colorado, simply backed up a data file at the advice of Dr. Frank because there was a suspicious activity that election data had been destroyed or manipulated. And when she backed up the file and then the vendor that came in afterwards to do updates to it, they destroyed election data, which was required to be kept by law for up to 2 years. So when this became public, it was a big embarrassment to the entire officials in Colorado, like the Secretary of State's office. So Jenna Griswold has had a cow over this stuff, and she has used her power and abused it to file all these charges against Ms. Peters to try to shut down any attempts to investigate this election problem that's going on in Colorado. And Dr. Frank has only been there to assist in aiding looking at the data, along with other people that Mike Lindell has been employed to look at. And he's not just doing it there. It's actually in all 50 states. But it's all related to that, and it looks to me like they're just trying to intimidate and to try to build some sort of a frivolous case against these people who are trying to expose the truth about our elections. And that's the fact that 2020 was not secure. There is massive fraud that took place when you take a look at all the individual data in addition to what Dr. Frank's work has actually pointed at. And all indications are, even when you look at the swing states, all of them, that the election would not have been won by Joe Biden had the elections been done fairly and properly like they should have been in the first place. And that has really raised public interest.
Sure.
And I'm glad that it has, because now the public is fighting back, because we want our elections to be fair, and we want them to be occurring as our constitutional republic should have it, not manipulated in any such way where people that run for office can be selected rather than elected by the public. I mean, we've lost our country and our constitutional republic if we lose our right to vote in this manner. It's extremely important, and that's why I want to be involved in it, and I'm also all for election integrity and doing what I can to make sure that it happens.
Well, underlying so much of this is the idea that no one should be looking. It should be hands off, and that, of course, you should trust us that the elections were fair and honest, that there was no cheating. And it's the same thing with the FBI's action, is how dare you question the government? That's the business of patriots everywhere, is to question their government. And so I think that's going to be an underlying recurring theme here through the rest of the show. But you know, one of the fortunate outcomes of needing to shift our interview from last week to this was that you were going to go to the trial in Washington County, so you could only speculate on what you'd see. But now you went past tense, and so you've known what's happened. So just to give people a recap, this is a court case that we mentioned months ago. Tim Sipple wanted to look at the data file Washington County used for a test of their voting system. County said no, because the voting company actually running Washington County elections, which is odd in itself, that a company is running our elections, also said no because it would expose so-called proprietary trade secrets, which, to pause the recap, is exceptionally weird. It's data. When you're counting votes, how you count them should not be a factor. It's 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 and so on until you get to the total. There is no how. It's just simple math, straightforward. So Washington County said no. The Washington DA said yes. This is totally public information. Hand it over. And now Washington County has sued Tim Sipple and the DA to block it and to keep the data secret. And to bring us to full speed where we are, the Secretary of State of Oregon also joined the lawsuit to block access to the data. So before we go any further, did I miss anything in that recap?
No, not essentially. Sipple had asked for the test data initially and what the county actually gave him. And it was also a request by a citizen by the name of Janice Deisinger. Mm-hmm. She asked for the election data from the 2020 election. So the county gave it to her, or gave it to Janice Deisinger, and Tim Sipple simply picked that up. And they had actually given the entire 2020 election data to Mr. Sipple, and the county all of a sudden decided, hey, we can't do this because there was a complete data dump into a file that's called a SQL zip file, which is a file used by the software of ClearBallot, which computes all the votes and tabulates everything. And the software in the SQL file, basically through commands by the ClearBallot software, organizes all of this data and then allows it to be tabulated. And the county has taken the position that, no, we don't want you to see any of that. But that gets to the root of what Tim Sipple really wanted anyway.
Right, right.
When he wanted to look at the test data, it was like, okay, how are you guys organizing this? How do you compute it? That's what they were going to show him in a different way. But what they ended up giving him is the actual election data in the SQL file. And so now the county is having a cow because I think they realize there could be problems with this. And so Tim Sipple just wanted to look at this and analyze it, and he's perfectly capable of doing that. And now the county is saying, no, because we gave you the SQL file, you can't have that. That's proprietary. It belongs to Washington County, and they're basically taking the position that if we give you that and it goes public, that could cause irreparable harm to the ClearBallot company, which supplies them with the data tabulation. And of course, they're two separate things. They tried to say that they're not, but they are separate, and there's no danger of any trade secret being released by ClearBallot to look at this file. It's simply a data dump and use SQL to organize it all at the command of their software, but that's not in the SQL file.
Yeah. Well, so, and it's just crazy that they are so afraid of letting people look at these kinds of things when and you're supposed to just trust the government. It's absolutely insane. Okay, everyone stay with us. We need to take a break. Coming back, we'll continue this with Chuck Weiss talking about the data tabulation case there in Washington County. Final second. Now here on the iSpy Radio Show, we're talking with Chuck Weiss, a meteorologist and expert analyst. And so, Chuck, you've been attending this lawsuit trial here in Washington County where the county is trying to withhold this SQL database. And, you know, I was thinking about the Secretary of State weighing in on this. Her job is to audit state agencies. And yet, for some reason, the election department should not be audited, shouldn't be looked into. I mean, that seems a rather odd stance for somebody who is allegedly the watchdog for these other agencies. Did Steve Jonkis, the attorney for Tim Sybil, did he address that at all? Or did the Secretary of State explain why no one should be looking at this public data?
Yes, he did. Actually, the other side took care of that issue for the question being asked by Steve Jonkis, because we had experts testify, and one of the most critical at the end of the trial was to bring on Dr. Douglas Frank, who is eminently qualified to look at any statistical mm-hmm. data and analysis, and in fact had done this for Washington County, looking at the voter registration key and his own analysis of how you could take a fixed percentage of the voter registration key with census data, by a fixed percentage, and predict from that how many voters were going to have voted in the 2020 election by every age group in every county. And to be able to show that, which he did, which he can do, is proof that you've got machine algorithm manipulation going on. This can't happen naturally. It just doesn't work that way, from the law of numbers and the way things work in a natural sort of setting. And he was going to show this data at the end of the trial, near the end of the trial, and the state brought it upon itself to say, well, we don't want this data getting into the record. So they grabbed an individual by the name of a Dr. Justice Grimmer from the Department of Political Science at Stanford University, and got him to come on in a special hearing before getting Frank to give his testimony. And this Professor Grimmer tried to assert that because Dr. Frank, in his eminent qualifications in mathematics and science, they tried to say because he doesn't have a doctorate degree in political science, that he shouldn't be allowed to use his numbers. They're not relevant.
The whole issue, though, is about the data. And if you're infusing politics into it, then that's the problem.
That's exactly right.
This is about election. This is simple numbers. This person voted, that person didn't. This person voted, this person voted, that person didn't. It's a tabulation of numbers.
Yes, that's right.
And so, again, if they pull this back into it's somehow proprietary information, that tells me what they're really doing is they're trying to hide how those votes were counted. And maybe you're looking at the voting trends, likelihood to vote, because if you want to commit fraud, that's how you do it, is you need to be able to know who is likely to vote or might not have voted, and so that way you can steal their vote and say that they did vote.
Yes, the crux of that entire argument is, if Dr. Frank has done something incorrect and Professor Grimmer could show where he did something incorrect, his calculations were wrong, that would be one thing. He even admitted when he gave his special testimony that he had reproduced the work of Dr. Frank, but he didn't say it was wrong. He just said that because this guy isn't like me and doesn't have a PhD in political science, he shouldn't be allowed to use the data. It's inappropriate. It's wrong, but never bothers to say how it's wrong. And if you can't do that, you don't have an argument. It's a specious argument. But yet, that was what the Secretary of State's office in Washington County did to try to shut Dr. Frank down. And guess what? The judge went along with it and disqualified him as an expert witness so that he couldn't present the data, which would get to the root of the problem, which goes to the central question that was at hand in this whole hearing, and that's whether or not this file of data which Tim Sybil wants to look at, whether he should be allowed to look at the file in the eye of public interest. And it's also important to realize that public interest that goes to this, and there were over 100 people that attended this trial, so there's plenty of public interest, that takes precedence over any contracts the county has if there's a suspicion that there's wrongdoing by the county or any parts of our government. And so this testimony should have been allowed because it shows that there is, in fact, a problem, and yet they wouldn't say that his data is wrong. They just said because he's not a political type person, he shouldn't be allowed to present it. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's beyond ridiculous because the whole issue is about the data, and so you would want a data scientist and the data expert to be able to weigh in on this. That's like taking congressional testimony, not from a farmer who does farming, but from somebody who paints farms, and somehow they're the expert. So did you get a sense of what exactly it was that Dr. Frank was going to expose that the county was so desperate to hide?
Yes, it was basically showing that he could predict how many voters were going to turn out across the age spectrum and every age group and in every county by using a fixed percentage, a number. It's like a key number, and could predict that with 99% accuracy or a correlation coefficient of 0.99. And the point in all of that is physically impossible to get that sort of result without human interaction and machine manipulation. That's not the way numbers work. And so what that data tells you from Dr. Frank, if he would have presented it, is you guys got a problem with these machines, and we need to look at this to figure out what's going on. Well, what Mr. Sipple wants to look at with his SQL zip file is precisely that. And so they were trying to say, no, you shouldn't be allowed to look at this file. Frank's work is not qualifying because he doesn't have a PhD in political science. This was just a ridiculous ruling, and it just raises further suspicion as to how the courts are handling this whole thing. Now, the judge hasn't decided yet whether she'll allow this to go public or not. She wants more information from both sides to be presented Friday in written testimony to her. So I'm guessing we'll get a decision sometime next week. But I have a much lowered confidence that she'll do the right thing when she makes a decision like this, which is on its face just completely ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I know that there are some potential options in case this does not go through. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock, and so we'll have to save that for another time. Chuck, I want to thank you so much for your time and your updates.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
If the judge decides against the Sipple case, it will only continue to fuel the fire and doubts about the 2020 election. The only way to put out that fire is to open up the data to prove there wasn't any manipulation. But hiding it and then expecting people to trust the government? Fortunately, Sipple's attorney has options, so we'll just have to wait and see. Some of you might be thinking this election cycle, you'll just sit it out. Why bother? They're just going to cheat anyway. Well, if there is cheating, sitting it out is exactly what they want, because that's how they can cheat. They use ballots of people who don't vote and cast them for their candidate. So if your ballot is going to be used, shouldn't you be the one to use it? This year, Republicans have to stick together, and they have to work to pull Democrats and independents over to their side by reminding them of what less than 2 years of Biden and the Democrats have done to us. And yes, that includes Democrats like Betsy Johnson. Think about it. Be smart. Because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.